August 15th meeting of the Palm Coast Planning and Land Development Board. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I might try the rest of the meeting with my glasses on.
Sorry, this meeting is the meeting of Wednesday the 16th, not 15th of August. Ms. Schaefer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Lucas?
Here.
Mr. Dolmey?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Scully?
Here.
Mr. Davis?
Here.
Mr. Lenhertz and Mr. Freeman are excused, and we have a quorum.
Thank you. Our first item of business is the approval of the minutes from last meeting, which was June 21st, 2017. Do any of the members have any additions or subtractions? Your motion to accept the minutes?
Move to approve.
Minutes.
Second. Motion is approved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Good. For second order of business is a special exception request to allow for a microbrewery at European Village, 101 Palm Harbor Parkway, units 123 to 125. Mr. Tyner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, everybody. Ray Tyner, planning manager for the City of Palm Coast. This is a special exception. You had one on your agenda last week, and basically a special exception takes planning board approval for those certain uses that may or may not be appropriate for certain areas. Item B, and we'll have the technical staff report to go through the criteria of our land development code that governs special exceptions. We are recommend approval. Just a little bit of background. This is at European Village, and as you recall, I think sometime last year we modified the master plan development agreement for European Village sometime back. And what we did is we allowed the retail uses to follow our commercial 2 zoning district. For this specific use, when we look at our land development code, it requires a special exception. So they're following our land development code when it comes to the criteria of commercial 2 uses. But with that said, Ida Meehan will have all the specific details.
Good evening. This is a special exception request referred to as Moonrise Brewing Company, application 3372. Chapter 3 of the Land Development Code allows a microbrewery use on property zoned COM2, commercial 2, with a special exception consistent with the identified criteria. This change was made possible as part of Ordinance 2015-08, which included microbreweries in the Commercial 2 District. Special exceptions are uses that may not be appropriate within a zoning district, but if subject to additional conditions, would promote the health, safety, and welfare of the nearby area. Approval criteria is basically that's consistent with the Land Development Code, concurrency is compatible with the surrounding area. The location for this request is 101 Palm Harbor Parkway, European Village, units 123, 124, and 125. You know, European Village is a mixed-use commercial and residential condominium complex. It's in an urban corridor with a mix of uses. There are opportunities for increased redevelopment in the area with the tennis center to the south. Access to European Village is via Hammock Dunes and Palm Harbor Parkway. The future land use for European Village is mixed use. And just to note, in the intent language for mixed use, for the mixed-use future land use district is to provide opportunities for residents to work, shop, engage in recreational activities in close proximity to residential. It's based on the notion of village centers, promoting innovative planning models to mix density with services, and also to serve as employment centers. The zoning for European Village in these units is, of course, master plan development. The original master plan development zoning was approved in 2002. It was updated in 2013 and amended and restated in 2016. In terms of the characteristics of European Village, it is unique. In Palm Coast, it's three and four stories. It has a compact footprint, vertical development with a large courtyard. It can be said to have a unique architectural character and design. This request is consistent with a nationwide trend toward more microbreweries within communities. This is the Journal of the American Planning Association. It is telling us planners that the microbreweries are coming, and certainly this application is an instance of that. And if you note that the number of microbreweries now are reaching levels and exceeding levels that have never been seen in the United States before. And if it hadn't been for the work for Ordinance 2015, 08, which allowed microbreweries in commercial too, we'd be using a much different process than the special exception process. Probably would have taken 6 months or more to approve this application should it be approved tonight. So in terms of compliance findings, we find that it's not in conflict with the public interest and consistent with our comprehensive plan, that there'll be no significant financial hardship to the city. If licensed, the use does not create a public hazard or nuisance, and it will be subject to Florida Department of Alcohol and Tobacco licensing. It's generally consistent with the requirements of the Land Development Code, and that it is an appropriate location for a restaurant, tap room, and microbrewery. It's generally compatible with the surrounding mix of uses. It's within an existing building and existing infrastructure. Will offer a tourist-like service and experience in a destination location, which is the goal of European Village. The property is code compliant with an approved site plan, and it'll bring a new business and amenity to this community. So based on these findings, the conclusion we make is that it complies with our Land Development Code and Comprehensive Plan. Therefore, staff is recommending that the Planning Board approve Application 3372, a special exception request for a microbrewery at European Village, 101 Palm Harbor Parkway, Units B, 123, 124, and 125. And the applicant's team is here. They'd like to make a very short shared presentation. And I'm available if you have questions.
Hi, thank you guys for having us here. My name is Ashley Dees, and I will be a managing member of Moonrise Brewing Company, overseeing kitchen, marketing, and bookkeeping. Thank you guys.
Hello, my name is Benjamin Davenport. As a managing member of Moonrise Brewing Company, I will be overseeing the front of the house, customer service, community involvement, and event coordination as well.
How you doing today? My name is Vance Tyson Joy. I'm going to be the brewmaster at Moonrise Brewing Company. I'm also a single dad. I apologize for having a baby in there. For those of you that don't know, you actually mentioned it as well, that breweries are becoming big tourism. We feel that we're going to increase the business for every business at European Village and be a draw for people looking to visit breweries. Just even coming up the highway, a lot of people are on their GPS, like, is there a brewery we can stop at on the way? And the European Village is right off the highway there. We're all experienced in this industry. At the breweries we've been involved with in the past, we've been a part of the community helping charity fundraisers for the local school boards, for law enforcement, for animals in need. We we're a family-owned and operated business. We really want to be a spot for the community to meet and people that can come learn about the brewing process and see the equipment. And speaking of the equipment, I have some pictures. We're having a three-barrel system there, so it's not like a giant industrial process going on there. These tanks you're looking at I'm bigger than them. They're about 4.5-5 feet tall. And then the other one is our brew house system, the hot side, and that is the mash tun, the boil kettle, and the hot liquor tank. Again, the one in the middle is still shorter than me, so it's not like we're bringing in a bunch of giant industrial equipment or changing anything to the building. There's no moving parts except for a couple of pumps moving liquid around, but there's no machinery or anything like that that's going to have any vibrations or anything of that nature. In the future, if we plan on expanding our distribution and upping our production, we were going to set up a separate area in an industrial park to pump out higher numbers and brew more barrels of beer. We're so excited to be doing this ourselves because we've worked for other breweries in the past, and now that I have experience, I'm planning on brewing the best beer of my life for this company. Mm-hmm. And we want to provide a quality product and run a business that the city of Palm Coast can be proud of. We're happy to answer any questions. There's really no questions that I can't answer about this industry, so if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them all for you.
Thank you. We're going to bring the subject back to the board for questions for either the applicant or Ida. So we'll start.
I have no expertise in this area, so I have to ask, what is the difference between a microbrewery and a larger brewery? Is it simply size or distribution amounts, or is it the product?
It's rated by production amounts. We would almost be classified as a nano brewery since we're below 3 barrels or below 5 barrels for our brew house. Microbrewery is the next step up, and it goes by barrels per year. So we're actually
talking about volume of production?
Huh?
You're talking about volume
of production.
Volume of production.
Okay. Like your capabilities per year is what would classify you as a nano brewery or microbrewery. We're smaller than a microbrewery, actually. It would take us opening a second location, lots and lots of bigger equipment in 10 years to even start considering being too big to be a microbrewery. That'll never happen. No matter how big we get, even with a second location, we'll always be classified as a microbrewery. I don't know off the top of my head the exact numbers of barrels per beer per year that you need to brew to move up to being a larger scale brewery. But Cigar City in Tampa is probably one of the biggest breweries we have in Florida, and they are still a microbrewery. Cigar City down in Tampa. They were one of the first really good or great craft beer microbreweries in our state. Now there's over 150 breweries. 10 years ago, there was less than 10. So it's really ramping up. Palm Coast is will be the only brewery here. We'll actually be the only brewery in Flagler County. So I think it's hard to even find gaps in the state anymore where there isn't a brewery, a microbrewery, and we'd like to fill this void, that's for sure.
How does your product differ from regular domestic beers?
It's very domestic beers are all classified as lagers. They use lager yeast. It's hard for us in Florida with. I apologize. It's hard for us.
We don't hear that, baby. You do.
I do. I'm stuck. The sweat's coming. Most of the big domestic beers are lagers, and there's been this trend of people, just like even with coffee, people want more robust, more flavorful beers. And with the water we have in Florida and the hardness of our water, it's perfectly suited for brewing ales. So we will have 90% of our beers will be ales, not lagers like these big companies. Very robust beers, very hoppy beers. It's a whole lot more flavorful and robust, different flavors. And extreme, we will probably offer a European-style Pilsner, which is the style of all these domestic beers, but doing it in a craft way. We're even planning on having some craft sodas that I'm going to design and make ourselves there. I just think we'll have a unique beer compared to everybody else in Florida as well.
On average, just off the top of your head, in order for you to be successful, how much of that, is it like a bar, a tap bar or something like that?
We're relying on this location because of where it is for people coming there.
Okay.
We're going to keep our distribution very low in the beginning, just a couple of other bars in town that want to carry the local brewer's product. Probably places like the Brass Tap or anybody with craft beer. Now they have, at their locations, people walk in like, what do you have that's local? Oh, we have Moonrise Brewing. It's brewed right here in Palm Coast, Florida. But we plan on the most of the beer, I'd say 75% of what we're brewing at this location is going to be sold at this location. And like maybe 10 or 15 accounts around town to start off with, just so they can
sell
it.
You're not relying on foot traffic or people coming in. It's not like some place where you would go to have a beer and a burger kind of thing, or is it?
Yeah, we do, but we're not relying on foot traffic because, you know, the other breweries I work with were industrial parks, and people still came to have a beer and a burger. And they're seeking out these places. We will have food. We will have wine as well. But our main product is the beer. We want to feature the beer. We want people. We have flights, which is, you know, four or five small samples so they can try each little 5 ounces of each different style of beer, learn about the different flavors of beer and how the brewing process is. Our brewing equipment will be displayed for the customers to see while they're having a beer, having some food. But we want to set it up so we are a brew pub, technically. People are coming there. They're basically drinking the beer from the source, and we have a food offering as well. And we put a lot of time into not having the same food as the other people in European Village. Like, we're studying their menus. We want to be different. We don't want to have any conflicting issues with anybody else in the village. We actually think they're all going to do better because of our presence, that people are going to come there to seek out the brewery, and the other businesses will do good as well.
Last question. For those things, I mean, it has a life, I imagine. Shelf life wouldn't be the right thing maybe to say, but it has a life.
It does.
And since it's yeasted, it is essentially a food
product. Not technically. The health department...
What do you do with what the you thing can't is, sell?
That isn't going to be an issue. The shelf life on our products without any preservatives is going to be 90 to 120 days. We don't have the brewing equipment size to give us enough inventory where we're ever going to get to, like, hey, 90 days is coming up on this beer. If we had to dump it, if it started going bad and we wanted to get rid of it, we have to call the state, the ABT, and they have to come watch us dump it because it's all highly monitored by the state of Florida.
So it's not the kind of thing that you can give to a farm for
the grain. The grain we give to a farm, all the spent grain, we're basically taking out the sugar source. We need the sugar because the yeast needs the sugar to create alcohol. So we need the sugar source, but the rest of that, there's still protein in that grain, and none of it goes to waste. We will be giving it to a local cattle farmer to feed livestock with. It's completely recycled.
Okay. That's
what's left after the brewing process.
Exactly. All the spent grains will be taken out, collected, and sent to local cattle farmers, so it's all completely recycled. There's nothing going in the trash. What was the other part of your question about shelf life?
You pretty much...
The beer is a pretty stable environment. It's got CO2 in it, it's got alcohol in it, so even if any kind of contaminant got in there, it's hard for a bacteria to live in beer.
What's the alcohol content?
It'll be anywhere from 4.5% to our highest beers would probably be about 8%. Eight. Yeah, I mean, if we really push the system, I might be able to get 9.5 out of it. But
okay.
That would be our max.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Why don't you just stay there?
Yeah. Yeah. Just a quick question.
Yes.
And I won't admit how much experience I have visiting microbrews. But you're speaking my language. But hours of operation, is that going to be consistent with the Irish pub in there?
We're required, according to European Village, to be open so many hours, and we want to comply with all the rules of European Village. And the closing time, I mean, technically you're allowed to be open until 2, but, I mean, if it's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday and everybody's closing and there's nobody else there, I mean, we'll shut down. It's just based on crowd size. But we plan on being open for lunch so that we don't want to be closed, and I know how it works with, you know, one business is closed and people don't come there because, you know, everybody needs to be open at the same time.
Right. So you're going to conform to the condominium association's hours?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jake.
No, that was it. That was my question. Thanks.
Clint?
I have no questions.
Rick? Chris, I'm sorry.
No questions.
Sir?
No questions.
I only have one question, and now I'm not sure I remember it.
You want me to help you out?
I should have written it down. I'm sorry, I don't remember the question, so don't worry about it.
It'll come back. I'm out of here. It'll come back.
It's a early senior moment, I guess. Anything for Ida? Okay, we're going to open up the meeting to, or the subject matter, to a public hearing. So anyone who would like to speak opposing or affirming this particular item could please approach the podium and give the clerk your name and address, and we'd be glad to hear from you. You have 3 minutes.
Good evening. Name's Rick Rubin. I own 2 commercial units in the European Village, and I'm here today. I'm not sure if I'm for this or against it, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but unfortunately, there was a letter sent out from the city that I just received a copy of yesterday that was dated July 27th saying that they had overwhelming support by the board. I've been to every board meeting either in person or present. There's been no discussion whatsoever about a brewery coming into European Village. Only time will tell whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but my concerns are, being I had nobody to talk to about this and was not aware of it, I'm here at the meeting for that reason.
We talked about it last meeting, right?
Excuse me, you'll have an opportunity to speak.
So I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned about the weight factors, whether that's going to be concerned. This is a second floor structure they're putting this on. I don't know if the city's aware of that. Weight factors on these barrels, based on my calculation, they're going to be over 30,000 pounds based on what they put in their letter to you. That's an awful lot of weight without a floor check, without any type of x-rays or anything, to find out if this floor can hold that much weight in that small of an area. Before the city opens up a liability issue, I think that needs to be inspected and find out if we have a floor that will hold that kind of weight. We certainly don't want to cause a problem to a building where we wind up causing damage to other people's units because of weight factors. These were retail spaces, restaurant spaces. We're going into an industrial-type use right now. I think it's more than just looking at a few documents and making a decision on it. I think we need to evaluate all the aspects in there. There are some association issues that are occurred with this that, once again, hasn't been brought up. Our insurance, based on our condo docs under 10.11 section, if there's a liability factor or insurance issue and our insurance policies go up based on that, you know, the unit owners need to be responsible for that cost and be aware of that and put an agreement to the association regards to that. There's been no agreement in writing regarding the 10.11 section in our guides of our association. I'm also concerned about the operations of hours. As they said, they're going to conform to them, but based on their letter, they're not opening until 4 o'clock. And they need to meet 8 hours, so they need to be open at least by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the reason why this is so important that everybody understands is that when you have a daytime business there, it's moving towards nighttime. And that's great, but the retail stores that rely on the customers that come in daily need to have businesses open during the day, just like a mall. Anybody that goes to a mall understands the fact that when you walk into a mall in any part of this country, you're going to find all the stores open. Those businesses are open for a reason. The malls make sure that they're open. We need all these stores open so when people come in, they don't find just 5 stores or 3 stores open. They find everybody open. And that's a fight our association has with our members to try and make that happen. So I hope that if they are approved, that they do meet those hours, because there's been so many businesses that have come in which don't need special exception from the city, and they say, oh, we're going to be open, but then they don't open. They realize, well, you know, it's better for our business at 4 o'clock until later. So that's an issue. And we also have a competition issue. We start turning everything into bars. You know, we want people to come in and have a selection of things. We have in our guidelines that we won't compete with other businesses, and we won't cause let me give you the exact wording on it. We won't result in a duplication of other business causing detrimental to an existing use of a retail unit. I'm concerned about the other businesses that do serve. We have two other bars, actually three other bars. I think we're a little overwhelmed with bars in the facility, and I'm sure the city is aware of the situations we've had with firearms in that village when people have had too much to drink. The people just made a statement here that they're not looking for walk-in traffic, but we need walk-in traffic. We need that. If they're going to be distributing out the back door, it doesn't help us. That's all I have for the city to take into consideration on this before we jump to conclusions. Just make sure that we cover all of our angles on this and make sure that floor is safe. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Just a second. Katie, a lot of what the gentleman just raised are condominium association issues that we don't have any control over, nor do we have any police power over those rules.
That's
so
correct.
So many of the items that gentleman just mentioned should be brought up at a condominium board of directors meeting. Is that right?
That's correct, and every property owner would have the ability to enforce those, and it's a civil matter.
Okay. But we will come back to both the applicant and the staff for anything else. Are there any other speakers? Please.
Good evening. My name is Kai Ekinji, and I also own a business at the European Village. I'm a part owner of the Humidor Cigar Bar and Lounge at the Village, the second or third business to ever open there back in 2005. And we are neighbors with Rick, Laura, looking forward to be neighbors with Ben and Ben. And I want to say a few words in support of this enterprise. And I'm going to keep it outside of the condo association rules, so just to provide some context. Ormond Beach has a microbrewery. Daytona Beach has a microbrewery. Port Orange has a microbrewery. And St. Augustine has a microbrewery. So microbreweries, beyond all these nitty-gritty and small things of technicalities, etc., really do two things. They create an amazing tourist attraction, if they succeed indeed, and based on their industry knowledge and the brewmaster's experience, I have no doubt this will be a brewery that's going to make noise, not only locally, but hopefully regionally and statewide and beyond soon. Two most celebrated breweries in Florida are, and actually with nationwide impact, are, since you're familiar with the industry, Cigar City that Ben mentioned in Tampa, and also Funky Buddha in Oakland in South Florida, which is a nationally celebrated brewery. And their impact on not only economy and business, but also to create tourism in the area is huge. So speaking of tourism, European Village is the number one tourist destination in Palm Coast. There is no other one-stop destination. That's entertainment, dining, lounging, bar hopping, and small boutique shopping outside of European Village, right? So you have certain facilities that are event-driven. So there may be a large event within the city limits of Palm Coast and create tourism. But European Village does that every day of the week, every week of the month, every month of the year, right? And it is a single address, if you do not consider the units, that also probably is among the top 10 revenue-generating businesses in the city of Palm Coast. So city of Palm Coast has a reputation, really more like an urban myth about not being business-friendly. I find it on the contrary. But this particular business is really a primary example of entrepreneurship. Grassroots with real people, locally owned, right? So that's going to be a tremendous addition, I think, to the city of Palm Coast. In terms of competition, because of the nature of European Village as a one-stop destination for entertainment, dining, and bar hopping and lounging, this actually will be a tremendous addition to the existing businesses. And I share with you not only that, I heard you said you think it's going to help everybody. I'm pretty sure it's going to, you know, I know for a fact. It's going to enlarge the pie. This business is not going to take a slice out of the pie for those businesses that are there. It's going to enlarge everybody's pie. Speaking of pies and slices, who's been here to Metsaluna here at European Village? Right? Pretty much everybody. So Metsaluna is an anchor business at European Village that drives the most traffic. Since then, there has not been a second business that does what they do in terms of that level of attraction. And I believe this particular microbrewery is definitely going to accomplish that. I'm here not only in full support as a neighbor, as a 13-year Palm Coast resident, and as a business owner also at European Village, but further, I am excited and I encourage the board to welcome them with open arms like we will. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers for or against? Yes. Excuse me, as an applicant, you're going to have an opportunity to...
I'm not an applicant.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to... Hi, my name is Laura Castro. I'm the owner of the location. They're going to be doing this in my location. I'm part of the board of directors, so obviously for the decision of the board of directors of the European Village, I had to recuse myself from making an approval. But last meeting that we had last Tuesday, last week, I brought it up to the board for approval, and we came to a motion that we were going to wait until this meeting with the city, depending upon what the city wanted to say, they wanted to approve the brewery, then the board of directors of the European Village Commercial Association would then approve the brewery. I know there's things about competition. He's saying, Mr. Rick Rubin saying that he doesn't want to add an extra bar, but the restaurant that operates there right now is my restaurant, Burrito 101. It's already a bar. I have a full liquor bar. I sell 45% of my sales every month are alcoholic sales. I sell margaritas, mojitos. I sell beers. I already have 9 beers on tap. I have at least 25 different types of beers. So my restaurant is already a bar. I have a lot of people that go to my place just to drink margaritas. They don't even eat. Some people eat and drink margaritas, so it's not a change of use. It's basically the same business. The only thing is that it's going to be adding a microbrewery. So I wasn't expecting on doing anything like this in my location when they came to talk to us. Me and my husband were we've been for the last 2 years thinking about doing a microbrewery ourselves. We've been going, doing research. We've gone to every microbrewery wherever we visit in Canada, in New Hampshire, Vermont. We've been thinking about this for like the last 2 years, and then they came to us, and we thought it was the best. We know where Vance and Ben and Ashley came from. They're one of the best local breweries that we have. If it wasn't them that came to me and asked to do this, I would never, if it was any other person with no previous experience, I would be like, no, I'm not going to do this. You don't know what you're doing because this is a very serious business. But I know that they know what they're doing, and I'm very positive, and I think this is going to be a great addition, not just for the European Village, but for the city of Palm Coast. Thank you.
Any other citizens like to approach the podium and speak? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing portion of the meeting and bring it back to the board for some discussion about what was heard. I only have one question, the floor bearing weight.
Yeah, I can answer that.
Okay, that's what I was hoping you would.
Yes, sir. The special exception, this is kind of the first step. If the special exception is approved, they would still need to apply for a building permit and an occupational permit. So that would go to our building department, and they will make sure that it complies with the Florida Building Code when it comes to bearing loads and fire protection and all those building code requirements.
Okay. As an applicant, you're welcome to...
Yeah, the weight is, for the three-barrel tanks, that'd be about 8 pounds a gallon. We're talking 93
gallons in each one of those tanks. So if they were all full at the same time, it would be about 5,200 pounds, not 30,000. Also, if we end up getting... We've already talked with SR Perot, the MillerCoors distributor for Flagler and Volusia County, and we can use their cold room at their location for extra storage of kegs. So we don't... We've already done all the math on this weight. We don't think it's going to be any issue.
Okay.
And as far as the hours go, When we sent that letter out saying 4 o'clock on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we were not aware of the hours you were supposed to be in operation at European Village. As soon as we found out, we, of course, want to comply and be open all the hours that we need to be to comply for that. We're not going to be the only business closed. We would never do that. We just were unaware of the timeline that you needed to be open.
Okay. But we're going to make sure all our ducks in a row at the time of building permits.
Yes, sir.
One housekeeping thing, Mr. Chairman. Can we reference the date that the letter went out for this meeting?
Yeah, I think it's in the package, isn't it?
Just so it's stated, because the gentleman stated...
The applicant...
I saw an affidavit. Here it is.
Yeah.
Notification affidavit went out on... I don't see the date.
8th of August.
8th of August? That's when they appeared to certify it.
Okay, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I think Ida has some additional information.
Sorry, go ahead, Ida.
The applicant sent out the required notification by certified mail 2 full weeks before the hearing. I think the speaker was referring to an internal letter, not the notification letter required for the special exception public hearing, and they exceeded the notification requirement.
Okay.
In terms of numbers.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make sure that
okay.
was
on. So we're back here to the board. Anybody have comments, Sybil?
No, I think it satisfied my questions at this juncture.
Dick?
Nothing further.
Okay. Clint?
Nothing. You asked the question that I was going to ask. It's who was on the structural support?
Yep. Okay.
You know, that was the main
concern. Was you ready? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay. I did it again. Something else I want to say.
Here, here's my
piece. I got a pen. I wrote down 4 Berry Weight. Okay, so we need a motion.
I move to approve.
I second.
Irene, would you call a roll when you have a moment?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Donnelly?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Congratulations.
Mr. Chairman, Ida, if you can give them the DO, maybe they can sign it and get a copy to them so they can take it to their board meeting.
Sorry.
Or we can wait later. We'll give it to you tomorrow. It'll be good. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. My next order of business is a special exception for Discount Tire located on a proposed lot located on the southerly portion of the existing Home Depot lot. Mr. Tyner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this is another special exception. It's accompanied by a site plan as well, your very next item. Mr. Bill Hoover, our senior planner, will do the staff report. Presentation for the Discount Tire special exception. I do want to say that this was kind of an exciting project because originally when the Home Depot Plaza was first developed, it was one entire lot with a couple out parcels, that being the Bob Evans, the Ruby Tuesdays, and some of the other out parcels surrounding it, like the hotel. And then the applicant approaches some time back along, you know, with the permission from Home Depot to create another lot fronting on State Road 100. And that's when they approached us about a tire store for Discount Tire. This would be, I think, the third attempt for Discount Tire in the city of Palm Coast. And we believe that this location is a very good location, very appropriate, very consistent with some of, being next to Home Depot and adjacent to State Road 100. But with that said, Mr. Hoover will have the special exception staff presentation.
Good evening. The site that is
being taken off of the Home Depot 17.5-acre tract is about 1 acre, and it's located in the northwest quadrant of I-95 and Palm Coast Parkway. You can see it in the red outline. They're requesting a special exception for an auto parts or tire store in general commercial or COM2. And directly to the west is the Bob Evans, and the to the north you can see Home Depot. And what happened here was at one time this was probably intended for a lot, and then there was a requirement that the impervious surface ratio for the project not exceed 70%, and they have large off-site stormwater areas, so they didn't get any credit for that. And the land development code was changed in 2009, where if you had a master stormwater system for your subdivision, you were allowed to get a pro rata share. So that's the reason that now this lot can be developed anytime after 2009. The comprehensive plan designates this mixed use, which allows all three types of commercial zoning. The a tire store is actually a permitted use in COM3, our most intensive commercial zoning. However, it's a special exception in COM2. You can see all the area in red is COM2. Across the Palm Coast Parkway, you're going to see some blue area, which is an MPD. But those are similar uses there to COM2. The applicant did notify all the property owners in the northeast corner of Boulder Rock Drive and Palm Coast Parkway. It was either 14 or 15 days prior to the hearing, and there's a requirement of being 14 days. And staff has not received any comments from the public on this. The special exception review criteria is from section 2.0703 of the Land Development Code, and it needs to meet these criteria. Item A, is it consistent with the specific requirements for that particular use as set forth in the Land Development Code? And essentially, in this case, it would be developed under the COM2 zoning district. There's also a Palm Coast Parkway overlay zone and other sections of the LDC that would apply to it. B, does it meet the concurrency requirements of the Land Development Code? The site's already within a well-established retail center with all essential services already available. And the site and the building will have to meet concurrency requirements as it goes forth through the permitting process. C, is it compatible with surrounding neighborhoods and promotes the value of surrounding land, structures, or buildings? It's consistent with the businesses, retailers, and restaurants surrounding it in this Home Depot Plaza shopping center. Additionally, the compatibility will be further reviewed under other factors, including architectural design and parking. And planning staff's determined the proposed building meets the architectural design standards commensurate with its location in the Palm Coast Parkway overlay district. And additionally, they meet all our parking requirements. Planning staff recommends the planning board approve special exception application 3358 for an auto parts tire store, which would include tire wheel installation and maintenance with the following conditions. And based on its location, staff felt that the conditions were very important. One, tire and wheel installation, maintenance, repair, and so forth are limited to automobiles, pickups, vans, and recreational vehicles. Services would not be provided to dump trucks, semi-tractor trailers,
full-size buses and large contractors' equipment. So that way we know we're not getting a truck stop since it's right next to the interstate. Two, outside storage shall only be allowed for standard dumpsters within enclosed dumpster pads, and used tires will be stored inside, and then they will be loaded onto discount tire trucks and taken for immediate off-site dispersal. Three, tire installation and maintenance shall only occur inside the bays, and we left them one exception here. If while they're working on those vehicles, somebody has a flat tire with one tire, they could go out and do that one without that person having to wait to get inside a bay. Four, vehicle services that are more intensive than what is described herein would not be permitted. And five, no overnight parking is allowed, and if vehicles are stored there overnight, they would just need to be inside one of the bays. The applicant has two representatives here in attendance, civil engineer Francis Dale and landscape architect Chris Reed.
The applicant have a presentation?
Not a formal presentation, but they are here and can answer any questions you have for them.
Good. Questions from the board? Sybil, we'll start with
you. I have none.
Okay. So the access is through the Home Depot area only, of course.
Correct.
And the landscaping offset is consistent with, like, the Bob Evans and, you know, the buildings adjacent to Palm Coast Parkway in terms of there's a multi-use path there and that goes by. That's
right. And so this part we're looking at right now is just more if the use is appropriate. And then the details on the landscaping will be discussed with the landscape plan and the site plan that will follow this, presuming this is approved.
Yeah, this is just based, you know, the special exception, is this use appropriate? And then if this is approved, then we would go on to the next item, which would be the site plan. We have a lot of details for you there.
Neither in your presentation nor in the documentation did I see anything about batteries. And batteries bring up a whole bunch of environmental issues. Does the applicant plan on doing anything about replacing of batteries and sale of car batteries? Many tire centers do.
Yeah, the person I was talking to said it was they basically just do tires and wheels.
Sir, my name is Francis Dale with the HNT Consultants. We're the civil engineers for the project. Discount Tire is just in the business of installing and repairing tires. They don't do other service repair work related, so it's just installation and sales of tires. So batteries, they don't replace batteries, to answer your question.
Okay. Sir? I wanted to get it out before I forgot it.
I'm glad you did. So he just answered it. I believe that this is not going to be a maintenance garage, service station-like garage.
Tires and wheels only.
Tires and wheels only.
Correct, sir. And they do minor tire repair, like patching and plugging tires, but no automotive repair type work. It's tires.
Chris?
No questions.
I have a question. It might be more appropriate at site plan, but Bill, from the site plan, it looks like the bays face Home Depot and not Palm Coast Parkway. Is that true?
Correct.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Public hearing time. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak, please approach the podium. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public hearing portion and bring it back to the board for discussion. Anybody have any issues or concerns?
I have none.
Bill?
None.
No? Okay. Do I hear a motion to do something with this?
All right, motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve it.
Mr. Chairman? And that's with the five conditions.
With the conditions that Bill laid out? Yes, of
yes.
course.
And second.
Sybil seconds?
Yes.
Okay, Mrs. Schaefer?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Dolmey?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
On to the second half.
Okay, familiar. So the site plan, let me, you want to call the item out, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, yes. This is a technical site plan for the Discount Tire Center located on the proposed lot at Home Depot.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, this is the technical site plan that goes along with it. And what's great about this one, interesting, is that this is the first one that is going to utilize our flexibility plan that the planning board worked real hard on our landscape plan. And as you recall, if they're going to use the landscape flexibility as part of our new landscape code, then it would come to the planning board for their site plan approval along with that landscape plan. Because technically, if they were not using the landscape plan, this would be under the tier 2 threshold, would have been a tier 1. But since they're using the landscape betterment plan, what we call it, it comes for you for your approval. And with that, it's a great example, and Bill will illustrate how our new code of utilizing this this betterment plan really, really works. So take it away, Bill.
Right. So essentially, we have to find that the landscape betterment plan is approved, and then in conjunction with this site plan. And let's see, I've already given you what's around there. So the here we can see the landscape plan. And the to the west of this immediately is some parking for Bob Evans. And then a little bit further to the west, probably about 90 feet, 100 feet from the building, would be the Bob Evans restaurant. And then so most of Bob Evans parking is to the west of the building and southwest of the building. And we've got three key criteria that needs to be met before the planning board can approve the site plan, which would include an alternative landscape betterment plan. And the reason it's got betterment in there, if you remember, is that it's not just an alternative plan. It needs to be at least as good as what a regular landscape plan would be. So to be eligible for the alternative landscape betterment plan, the applicant must propose a landscape plan with at least the same quality of required plants and the same amount of landscaped area, but in a revised location or design layout. Bill Butler has reviewed this for the city and found that it does meet all this criteria. Essentially, what they're doing, if we went back to this here, is along the east property line, there's supposed to be a 25-foot buffer, and that's against the I-95 FDOT interchange area. So the city already plants additional landscaping out in this interchange area because we've got a walkway going through there, and we want to provide a good first impression for residents coming into the city. And so we're essentially shifting 15 feet of the landscaping buffer out into the FDOT area. The second criteria is that the applicant must provide at least two landscape hardscape features not otherwise required. And these need to be pedestrian friendly. And what they're proposing is on the, if you went to the southwest corner of the building, they are proposing a park bench right there and another one right up there. And so that would meet the criteria, and there's landscaping around those two. And the last criteria is that the proposed changes must provide at least as much public benefit, screening from rights of way and adjacent properties, an aesthetic appeal as if the landscaping standards were strictly followed. Bill Butler and planning staff have determined the alternative plan would meet these criteria and would also provide some additional landscaping on the applicant's dollar for putting this out in the right-of-way area, and the city already has a park bench out there. And going over to the particulars of the site plan, they meet the setbacks of 20 feet from the north, 25 from the south, and then there's 10 foot on each side. The parking, there's a required of 21 spaces. They're providing 22. And we already discussed the impervious area where the site would be at 64%, and the requirement is not to exceed 70. This is their building elevations. If you can see those, this is probably about the third or fourth rendition. They were willing to make some additional standards here, maybe a little bit more than the applicant initially intended, but staff felt because it's in the Palm Coast Parkway Overlay District, it's an entrance into the city, that Overlay District requires, it's primarily for aesthetics, and additionally that's required above and beyond the commercial standards, and it's not a, there's not a particular set of standards, it just says additional. So it's a little bit subjective. And the other thing is, the intent is to limit access to properties. So the access thing's already been taken care of because the access would be provided through Garden Street over there into the main entrance road that comes in off the traffic signal at Boulder Rock Drive. And you can see the on the north elevation, there's the three entries and for the bays. The storage would be on the left side, which would be the east side of the building, which would, because that's going to be the loading area, that's going to be the least attractive. You can see the west elevation. That would be as you're approaching the building and next to Bob Evans. They've made that building look very nice. And additionally, since they would be getting a development order, staff's required to review this for the criteria in section 2.0505 of the Land Development Code. The proposed development must not be in conflict with or contrary to the public interest. And staff's belief that this building will be compatible with a variety of other uses developed west of I-95 along Palm Coast Parkway. Criteria B, the proposed development must be consistent with the provisions of the Land Development Code in the Comprehensive Plan. Staff has found that it will provide compact and contiguous development where public services are already in place and available, and additionally it would discourage urban sprawl. Criteria C, the proposed development must not impose a significant financial liability or hardship for the city. In this case, since the essential services are already available and it's an infill site and the applicant will pay all applicable impact fees, it will meet this criteria. D, the proposed development must not create an unreasonable hazard, nuisance, or constitute a threat to the general health, welfare, or safety to the city's inhabitants. If you looked at the aerial photo, I measured it off. The closest residential home is to the northwest off of Boulder Rock, and it's at least a quarter of a mile away. And the site is also designated mixed use on the future land use map, which allows not only COM2, but intensive commercial, which is COM3 uses. And the last criteria, the proposed development must comply with all other applicable local, state, and federal laws, statutes, ordinances, regulations, and codes Staff has reviewed this, and it's met things like the stormwater calculations through St. John's Water Management District. Planning staff recommends the planning board conditionally approve a Tier 1 technical site plan that includes the alternative landscape betterment plan application 3359 for Discount Tire. And we got three conditions of approval. First one is essentially that we finalize the agreement with FDOT. So we already have an agreement with FDOT in writing, for which allows the city to plant and maintain and irrigate landscaping in the interchange area there. We just need to get, and Bill Butler has talked to FDOT. We've got like an initial, like, it's okay at this point. So this would need to be finalized. And the way that would work is these plans would be sent over to FDOT to finalize this agreement, and the applicant would then be writing a check. So they provided the design, and then FDOT has advised Mr. Butler that they want the city to do the planning, or the city to hire the contracting, not Discount Tire. So that would be done, and then the city would maintain this in perpetuity.
Yeah, just let me just add on that, and that's typical kind of FDOT. We already have a maintenance agreement there. We're maintaining that area. So the beauty of this alternative landscape plan was when, you know, citizens are coming off or visitors coming off, it's going to beautify that area a little bit more. But how FDOT works is they want to see the city approval before they approve it, but we're really confident that they're going to improve the enhancement of the landscape there. But we just need to provide them the approval from the planning board and the plans to them if you do approve the site plan.
And the next two items are relatively minor. There's an FPL transformer in the northeast corner of the site. It needs to be moved just a couple of feet so it meets FPL standards and the city standards. And when you move that, a couple shrubs might have to get moved. So it's a little bit, it'll probably require them to do a minor amendment to the plans, or we may just do it on an as-built. And then the last thing is the city wants to see a detail. We've sent them the city standard detail for park benches, and we just asked them that they would provide something comparable to that in whatever color and design they want. It's just that it would be a high quality. And the applicants are here, and they do have their own presentation.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Francis Thayer with H&T Consultants, Inc. We're the civil engineers for the project. I've got Chris Reed here, too, the landscape architect for the project, and we got the building architects on our phone right now in case there's questions about the building. They're out of the Anaheim, California, the Plump Group. They're the building architects for the Discount Tire project. So most of this stuff has been discussed by Bill earlier. So Discount Tire, the lot summary, again, it's directly east of the Bob Evans restaurant and south of Home Depot. And the main access to the site is via Garden Street. The zoning, Bill mentioned, is COM2, and the land use is mixed use. The lot size is 0.98 acres and part of the Home Depot lot 1, 7.3 plus or minus acres in size. So what we're proposing for this site is just a one-story building. The floor area is roughly 7,300 square feet. We're going to be building parking spaces and access drive for the site, utilities, water, sewer, and stormwater will be part of a master stormwater plan, master stormwater system already in place as part of the Home Depot Plaza. We're going to have the pavement marking and some traffic signs installed too. A lot of the work includes landscaping, and Bill already went through in detail the proposed landscaping within the site and outside the property boundary within the FDOT. Right away. We're going to have a dumpster pad with enclosure. So there won't be any outside storage units for tires. We're just going to have a dumpster for regular trash, and that's pretty much it for as far as the site. Location map, Bill already showed this thing earlier. It's just south of Home Depot. Next, please. This closer shot, so it's a vacant lot. You can see the Bob Evans parking on the west side of the Discount Tire site. So, next slide, please. So the proposed site plan, it's kind of hard to see from what we have here, but it shows you the parking areas on the south, southeast, and the north. The transformer in question, as you can see, is like on the northeast corner of the site with a square box with a T symbol. So we're going to work closely with Mr. Butler and Mr. Hoover and working with FPL to get that situated correctly. FPL's requirement is to have an 8-foot clearance on the front cabinet and 3-foot clearance around the cabinet, so it's kind of hard to position that the transformer correctly. But like what I said, we're going to work closely with Mr. Hoover's team and FPL and the client to make sure that we locate that transformer accordingly. Utilities are already in place. Our drainage system will be connecting to the north on Garden Street. That's our tie-in points. So there's existing inlets there. Water, we're connecting from the west side of the site, and power, obviously, from the transformer. The building elevations, I believe that Mr. Hoover's gone through the building elevations, and we've been working closely with Mr. Hoover's team, Mr. Butler, in getting getting this thing close to the City of Palm Coast requirements. So, and we're very thankful for all the support and effort that Bill Hoover and Bill Butler's team have provided on this project. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to Chris Reed to go over briefly the landscaping plan for this project.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Reed. As you can see, we've met all the requirements that the city's asked of us, along with the betterment plan. We did quite a bit of extra landscaping outside of the property line on the east side, well beyond the 15 feet. I think we're probably out close to 30 or 40 feet beyond the property line. We enhanced it. And we used a lot of native plant material and low maintenance material, so it should be real easy to maintain. We also provided an irrigation system that will be tied into the city's system. It's three zones. Each zone is separated by code requires one zone for the trees, one zone for the shrubs, and one zone for the bahia grass that will be added out there. We have added the two benches. We've also got a couple of pots that will be in front of the building. Other than that, it's a pretty straightforward landscape plan. All the requirements have been made, and we worked very closely with Mr. Butler and Mr. Hoover to make sure we met all everything.
Thank you. Folks, have any questions?
Got a couple.
Okay, we'll open the meeting to the public. Any member of the public who would like to speak on this subject, please approach the podium. Seeing no one approaching the podium, we'll close the public hearing portion and bring it back to the board for discussion. Anybody have any issues?
I do.
Sir.
Why are we requiring park benches for a business when we haven't been requiring park benches for other businesses? This is not a restaurant. It's a tire discount. And part of the landscaping, I mean, I don't understand that. And will a fence be needed? Is a fence going to be necessary to keep, because they're going to be storing tires and all?
Well, the landscape betterment plan, basically, if the reason it went goes above and beyond was, and we discussed this probably a year ago here, was we give them a choice or a menu that they get to put. So you could provide fountains, things like that for your alternative landscape plan. So if it's a nice day and you're getting your tires changed, I think the last time I had it done, it was maybe an hour or something like that. But the personally, I think a lot of people are going to get their tires changed are going to go next door to Bob Evans if it's in the morning and have breakfast. But let's just say you're getting your tires changed. It's a nice day. You got the option of going out and sitting on one of those two park benches. So that's up to the applicant to design which one of those type of hardscape features from as long as it's pedestrian friendly. So that's not really up for staff to determine that, hey, we don't want the park bench, we want something else. Now, if we felt it wasn't appropriate, then we would have said, you know, try something different. But I think it works just as well as a fountain. Additionally, between the right-of-way and the buildings, there's an existing fence already there. So if people are walking along the trails, for instance, they would not be able to visit the tire store. They would need to go around to get into the center. So the tires are all, what they do is they store, the bays are at the front of the building, and then behind the bays, they store the tires. So when somebody comes in and buys four tires, they swap the four tires to put on your vehicle, presuming you're getting a full set, then they take the used tires and keep them there. Then when the discount tire truck comes in to deliver more tires, they take all the used tires back to the distribution center.
And Bill, one of the benches is kind of adjacent to our existing sidewalk and trail along Palm Coast Parkway, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it's right there.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So one of them is adjacent to the sidewalk that's existing. So if someone's walking and they want to take a break, the general public can sit there. And then the other one to the north, like Bill said, if someone wants a nice day, go out and wait on the bench for their tires to be changed.
I don't think anybody that's walking along the Palm Coast Parkway is going to have access to that bench, though.
No, but your customers.
Yeah. Or sit there and go to Bob Evans afterwards. I've provided some shade trees there, so eventually you'll get a good amount of shade as well. So you're not sitting on this.
A lot of people, too, like if you want to have some privacy while on the phone, it'll be a good spot for them to, you know, outside of the office and, you know, with the shade that Chris mentioned, have some privacy while they're on the phone. So I think the benches will help both the customers and, you know, look more aesthetically appealing to the area.
Bill, maybe I've got this wrong, but this landscape plan that was developed, they have a choice. They could do some hardscaping features like a fountain or park benches, but they could also do additional plantings, right? Or is there a hardscape feature a requirement?
There's a requirement of two hardscape features not otherwise required. I believe so.
Okay. So that's part of what we adopted as that alternative landscaping.
Correct.
We did it to ourselves. What can I tell you?
Yeah, but to me, that one bench that is circled in green right now with an arrow by it is going to benefit the sidewalk, which is city-owned property. Correct? Somebody just took it off, but anyhow, that.
Yeah. Bill did, but I think, didn't I hear you, sir, just say that would not be accessible from Palm Coast Parkway?
No, that site's fenced off, so I don't think you have access.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
The site, that's, I believe it's got a fence all along that property line. It's also really heavily landscaped, so you're not going to have access from that walkway along Palm Coast Parkway.
So that bench is only really of only use to people who were at Discount Tire.
Or Bob Evans, if they know.
Or Bob Evans, yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure.
Somebody on that side of the fence.
Right, exactly, yes.
I see that bench as me kicking somebody out of the store and telling them to go make their cell phone call on the bench because they're driving me crazy.
Yeah, the other bench is pretty close to the front door, so either one.
Sorry,
it was just I think the bench has worked well because there are no maintenance. Whereas if we start putting fountains in, then there's a constant expense and constant maintenance to these things. And
it's a tire store to be gilding a lily, I think.
Yeah, right.
So it's really going to benefit Bob Evans more than it's going to benefit the discount.
It looks
possibly.
Like,
yes, exactly.
It's kind of we put it in an area where we felt it was a mutual benefit to both, that the one bench.
I don't remember any of this in our plans of these two options that were given to any developer.
This is the first time we've used it.
Right? Yes, sir. First time.
Yep. Okay. Chris?
No questions.
Clint? No questions. Okay. So we're back to the board for discussion or motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Mr. Chairman?
Motion to approve, including the landscape plan?
Three conditions.
Right. Yes.
Good.
Sorry, move to approve, including three conditions.
Thank you.
I messed it up last time.
Ms. Schaefer?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Dolney?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
A hesitant yes.
I don't think that counts.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. I don't remember either, to be honest with you. But I don't know if I was there. So. Okay. Our next item on the agenda, a zoning map amendment for agricultural, part of Flagler County designation to light industrial for 5 plus or minus acre parcel located 1,800 feet north of Whiteview Parkway on the east side of U.S. 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you don't mind, this is one that there's a companion comprehensive plan amendment item, agenda item 5, and then the zoning agenda item 6. Mr. Papa has one presentation for those, but we'll have to vote separately on the two. And just to let you know, this is like a cleanup item. This item, we had annexed this property back in 2006. And when you annex a piece of property, eventually you've got to designate the city's future land use map designation and the city's zoning designation. It was not done on this property. And now they're ready. They're going to expand their master plan that they got approved by the county. So now's the time to get it to the city designation, because right now currently it's the county. But with that, Jose has the presentation.
Okay. Do we have to do a future land use map amendment as well?
Yeah, that's what Jose's doing right now. That's your item.
We're going to have two
five.
Votes.
Yes.
Have to have two votes, but one presentation, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Sure.
Is everybody comfortable with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Jose.
So, good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department, Planning Division. What we have before us today are two companion applications. It's for Tiraca, Florida, and what you have before you is a future land use map amendment and a rezoning or a zoning map amendment. So just some background. The subject property is approximately 5 acres. It's located about 1,800 feet north of Whiteview Parkway. And to give you some reference, if you've ever driven down US 1 and you know where the Alamo it's a combination commercial and warehousing facility is, this parcel is just north of that, directly north of it. So the first item here is the future land use map amendment. As Mr. Tyner said, currently it retains the Flagler County designation of agriculture and timberlands. And what's proposed is to change that future land use map designation to mixed use. And an analysis was done based on that change from agriculture to mixed use. And what the findings are, that there's really no significant increase in public facilities impact. And additional in-depth analysis will be conducted as part of the site plan review of the actual development of the site. Looking at the environmental factors attached to this site, there are some impacts to on-site wetlands, but those impacts will be minimized and mitigated consistent with the city's land development code, because again, they still have to meet the requirements of the land development code. There are some floodplain areas within this site, but again, with that, at the appropriate time, at the site plan review level, those impacts will be addressed as part of that site plan review. And then overall, again, there will be a technical review for compliance with the land development code as part of the site plan review. This is only a change in the color of the map that would allow them to move forward with that site plan review. So looking at what a mixed-use designation for this site does, as you can see, to the west of it are lands that are designated as industrial. That is within unincorporated Flagler County, but the Flume designation there is industrial. It contains that development more commonly known as Town and Country Industrial and Business Park. To the north of it is mixed use. To the east is also mixed use. And to the south is a combination of mixed use, and another lot down is an institutional designation. That's the African American Cultural Center. So the designation to mixed use is certainly very consistent with the surrounding land uses in this area. So reviewing the proposed designation with consistency for the comprehensive plan, one, there is available infrastructure to serve the site. That's water and sewer. The location of additional commercial non-residential development is appropriate, as shown by the previous map. The land use patterns do not increase the cost of providing utilities. Again, they're available adjacent to the site. And improving the balance of land uses. Again, an opportunity here to continue to expand residential, non-residential use. I'm sorry, non-residential use within an established non-residential area. So the findings, there are no significant impact on the level of service for public infrastructure, and it is consistent with the surrounding land uses and consistent with the comprehensive plan. As stated, there is a companion amendment to the zoning map for this particular parcel. Currently, on the zoning map, it's designated as agriculture. And what's proposed here is light industrial zoning district. And we will review the consistency of that light industrial zoning district with the surrounding uses. Again, to the west are lands designated as industrial in Flagler County. To the south is light industrial zoning. To the north is general commercial, but certainly a non-residential use. Now, to the east, you do have a multifamily residential zoning district. But this multifamily residential district would be buffered from the industrial use, light industrial uses here. And I have to be clear about that. Light industrial uses, like mini warehousing, that would be permitted on this property as a result of this zoning change. Maybe it's not so difficult to see here, but if you follow that, there is a darker area here of vegetation, and that's within a conservation easement. So there is a natural buffer that will be provided between this light industrial site and any multifamily residential development to the east of it. Again, reviewing for consistency with a comprehensive plan. Again, this subject property is approximate to available infrastructure. It does not cause a significant financial liability or hardship on the city, because again, the the public facilities to serve this site are already adjacent to it. Again, its impact on environment and natural resources, this site will still be required to meet the land development code and will be subject to further review and permit requirements. There's no threat to the general health, safety, and welfare of the community, and it still must comply with other local, state, or federal regulations. And again, that's evidenced by that the potential uses on the site are compatible with surrounding uses and will be subject to further development review. Again, it's compatible with surrounding land uses and the criteria to accomplish a legitimate public purpose. It really provides the commercial areas, retail, office, light industrial, along an established major arterial. So based on all those findings, staff is recommending the following, that the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend to the City Council the approval of the two companion items. One, the future land use map amendment from agriculture and timberlands to mixed use, and the zoning map amendment from agriculture to light industrial zoning district. And just to wrap it up, should these applications be approved tonight, they would still have to go to City Council for two readings, likely in September and October. And if those are approved, they would still need to come in with a site plan for approval. That concludes staff presentation.
Is there an applicant, or are we the applicant? Is the city the applicant?
This is city initiated, conditioned by the annexation in 06.
So we'll ask the board if they have any questions of Mr. Pappas.
There are currently, Mr. Pappas, good evening. There are currently no plans other than these actions before us.
We've seen a preliminary site plan, but that's under separate review. And if you know the Alamo, it's a mirror image of that particular development where you have the commercial or non-residential space out front and out back, hidden from view, are the mini storage.
And I believe when they were approved in the county, because it's already an existing facility out there, they were approved with a master plan. This is just a continuation of what they were approved to have before.
We would see some development plans, because currently that is not an attractive space back there by the Alamo and the storage areas.
Sure, and that will be reviewed by staff at site plan. Yes.
Nothing here.
Nope.
Nothing. Me neither. We have to do a public hearing, right?
Yes.
So open it up to a public hearing. Anybody like to approach the podium, they're welcome to. Nobody approached the podium.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, if you could open it up on both items.
Yes, of course. So I'm going to open the public hearing portion for both the future land use amendment as well as the rezoning. Seeing no one approach the podium, I'll close the...
Did you make a note of that?
Yes, I did. I will close the public hearing for the future land use amendment and the rezoning. Okay, so, board members?
No questions.
No questions, no discussion? Need a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we recommend for approval to the City Council the future land use amendment from agricultural to mixed use.
Excellent.
That has to be separate.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
And Chris seconds? Ms. Schaefer?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Dolney?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Now the issue of the rezoning.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we recommend for approval to the City Council the rezoning of the subject parcel from agriculture to light industrial.
Second.
And a second. Guys are the hardest working guys on a board.
Like
they were doing really well.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Dolney?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, before you get to the next two items,
yes, sir.
I am required to declare a conflict of interest on both the next two items, as I worked for several years for the current landowner and up until recently, and also am representing some potential purchasers that could be affected by this action. So I've declared a conflict for both and filled out my paperwork, which I will give to Irene.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Katie's happy. Okay.
Yeah, I'm very happy.
Okay. So our next order of business is to amend and restate the second amended and restated Palm Coast Park Development of Regional Impact Order. Mr. Tyner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one, too, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, there's such a minor change to the amended DRI, and mainly the next item, number 8, it's also a minor change, but to have them as one presentation makes sense. You'll understand it better with the DRI if you Bill is prepared to do one presentation, if you don't mind, on this. It'll be a little bit more clear.
And we'll have to still do two motions and seconds and votes.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, just like the last one.
Does anybody have any concerns about doing that? Okay.
And, you know, just to go way back to 2004, I believe, when this property was annexed into the city of Palm Coast, and For those of you on the board, you know, it did go to planning board way back when they were doing what we call a DRI, which is better known as a Development of Regional Impact. As you can see on the screen, it really covered, you know, almost 5,000 acres located along U.S. Highway 1, both on the east and the west side of that property. And basically, the DRI application, because it's a Development of Regional Impact, it was approved. It's a 25-year plan, and, you know, not only did City Council approve it, but this goes through the Northeast Regional Planning Council, goes through the St. Johns River Water Management District, Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission. It goes through the Florida Department of Transportation, goes through adjoining counties, goes to Flagler County. Everybody, the state, DCA at the time, everybody gets their hands on it. Everybody reviews it for potential, you know, environmental impacts. I forgot the Department of Environmental Protection. All those agencies review this plan. It is a long process, probably 2 years or so plus that we went through the original DRI application. And so I want to tell you that, you know, of all those environmental concerns, all that is set in stone in the DRI application. What part of the DRI, too, is you don't know what's going to happen 25, 30 years from now. And 2002 was, you know, 14 years ago, and times have changed, markets change. And the DRI allows for flexibility. Not only the DRI, but the MPD also allowed for flexibilities of these uses. You're entitled to certain entitlements, certain amount of residential units, certain amount of industrial intensity, commercial, office. All those are within that DRI. But the DRI also allows that flexibility, if you don't supersede those entitlements, to move things around, to be able to do that based on the market. So what's very exciting for us, staff, and is that we will soon not see cows out there. There's been cows out there for a long time, and now we're really starting to see a lot of potential for some rooftops. And what this application is with the DRI, a little minor shift that is allowed by the DRI, and the Master Plan Development Agreement highlights that. So Bill will fill in the details of basically what they're doing. They're not increasing any entitlements. They're not changing what was approved. They have the flexibility within the document to change around where those uses can be, and what they're proposing makes a whole lot of sense to us. And Bill will have some of those details in their presentation.
Does this change we're going to discuss tonight have to go to all of those members of the
No, it's such a, you would have to do what they call a notice of proposed change, is if it's a major change, you know, if change in entitlements, it would go to those different agencies. What we would end up doing after, you know, it goes through our process, we'll send a courtesy letter to the Northeast Regional Planning Council to let them know that we did a minor modification, but it's not required.
Okay. What's up?
Good evening again. Okay. The DRI is 4,677 acres, and you can see it's located on both sides of US 1, and on the with north sort of being at the top there, so you can see Hargrove Grade at the bottom left there, and it goes up to Old Kings Road, and then on the very north part, you can see it even extends over to I-95, and then more from the middle to the south, part of it extends over to Belterre Parkway. And so we're doing two things. We're requesting an amendment to the DRI development order, and that needs to come first, and also doing a modification to the MPD development agreement. So a little bit of history here. 2004, as Ray mentioned, this was approved by the City Council. And in April 2007, the City Council approved the northwest portion of the DRI in a rezoning to the Sawmill PUD. And 3 months later, they did essentially be the first amended and restated Palm Coast Park DRI. October 2008, another substantial portion of the DRI was rezoned to MPD. And then in 2011, they're sort of doing a little bit like what we're doing right now. They're running the second amended and restated Palm Coast Park DRI through so that they could do an amendment and rezone all the properties in the DRI except for 92 acres to the Palm Coast Park MPD, and there's 92 acres that part of it is on the very north end, and it's owned by Florida Agricultural Museum, and additionally there's some lands that are now owned by the city that I believe were dedicated from the DRI in the development agreement. They had to dedicate land for like utilities to the city and fire services and parks and stuff like that. And so this gives you, we're not changing anything in here, but I guess if I was in your shoes, I'd want to know, hey, what's really, is this thing approved for? And you can see it's a huge number of square footage. These are the maximum entitlements of 3.2 million square feet. Additionally, there's 3,600 residential units. And then there's, you can see there's common area, which is basically typically preservation areas. So it's to the point where like 45% of the site will be ended up being conservation lands. And so essentially the DRI, we're doing two minor changes. There's a classification they put on there. And if you think of the DRI, it sort of works like the comprehensive plan, which we have a future land use map. And like on the previous one, we had for Discount Tire, that was labeled mixed use. So in this case, on track 19 and track D of track 20, those were previously labeled business institutional, which allowed like office, commercial, and industrial uses. Those are being proposed to be changed to residential. And we can see this on the, this is called the Master Development Plan. And so you can see at the bottom here, it's that area right in there. It went from the magenta color to the yellow. And so the business institutional at the very bottom here, there's also an acreage level that shows how many acres
are currently designated that. So in this case, the residential was 1373, and you probably can't see it, but it went to 1467 because the 94 acres changed from business institutional to residential, and the business institutional dropped from 759 acres to 665. And essentially, that's what the DRI is being changed for. Okay, now switching gears over to the MPD, we have a total of, looks like, about seven tracks here being changed, and the they also have things like now we're getting into the zoning, and so there's actually an extra step in here. The MPD has a uses map, and additionally, there's zoning categories. So if we go to this next map, you'll be able to see a little bit more what this table is referring to. So in this case, Hargrove Grade is at the bottom southeast corner here, which would be over here. And next to that is two tracks, number one and number two. Those are designated residential medium density. And we're also allowing single-family residences in here as well as multifamily. So one of the things that the developers have advised us, that the market has changed, and there's not everyone wants multifamily homes. A lot of the people coming down here to retire, they're looking for maybe a 50-foot wide lot. And we saw a little bit on the Matanzas Land MPD 6 months ago, where they were doing 50-foot wide lots in that community, and I think there was about 100 some. So again, the market, you reacted to the market changing, so it went from condominium type uses and townhouses to narrow lot single family. So that's what they're asking in this case. When we get up here to the this area right here, we've got track 6A and 7A. It's a simple thing. They've asked for single family uses as well as multifamily. And then in the middle area here, where Matanzas Woods Parkway intersects, they're actually trying to, they're proposing to move some of the industrial. If that road came straight through, they changed this one, lot 19, or track 19, was previously industrial, and you can see that they've switched it to this tract right there, which is track D of track 20. And then, so additionally, this lot right here, which is
lot nine,
that one, that 18. One right there. I'm sorry, I told you wrong here. This is lot 9 of 18, of tract 18. And so these two here switched from flex uses or industrial over to residential, medium density, and then they're asking for single family or multifamily uses. So essentially, the industrial's moving probably a quarter mile or a half mile to the south.
Basically, what they want to do is get the industrial away from the residential, so they're moving it, would like to move it.
So the criteria, we review this as for the rezoning in the MPD, I'm sorry, the rezoning and the DRI is the five criteria again. The proposed development must not be in conflict with or contrary to the public interest. Essentially, staff found the proposed land uses are already permitted in the DRI and MPD, and they're just being relocated to other tracts where staff determined they would still be compatible. Additionally, there would allow more flexibility for the types of residential uses, and that will not create any issues as far as compatibility. B, the proposed development must be consistent with the provisions of the Land Development Code and the Comprehensive Plan, and The changes, since there's no increase in DRI entitlements or no incompatibility issues arising, this will be acceptable. Criteria C, the proposed development must not impose a significant financial liability or hardship for the city. And essential services are already available or will be provided by the applicant at his expense. The applicant has previously dedicated sites to the city for utilities, fire services, and a park. And they'll have to pay impact fees. So it meets criteria C. Criteria D, the proposed development must not create an unreasonable hazard or nuisance or be a threat to the general health, safety, or welfare. And the proposed changes will only allow these uses already permitted to relocate, and the increased flexibility on houses will not create any issues. Last criteria E, the proposed development must comply with all other applicable state, federal laws, statutes, and so forth. So in this case, it's still governed by the state DRI statutes, as well as the city's land development code and the comprehensive plan. As far as public notice, in this case, the applicant put up 6 signs because they got so much frontage along US 1. Additionally, they mailed out a whole bunch of notices to people 300 feet around all the tracks being changed. They did hold a neighborhood meeting on August 7th. One person attended, asked questions, but did not have any issues with what was proposed. And additionally, staff has had a couple people inquire about what was going on. We provided them information, but no one had any concerns or added any comments to staff. Additionally, the applicant has provided an affidavit stating they meet the requirements of the Land Development Code for public notice. Planning staff recommends that the Planning Board recommend approval to the City Council of the third amended and restated Palm Coast Park DRI Development Order, which is application 3369, and also recommend that Planning Board recommend approval to City Council of an amendment to the Palm Coast Park MPD Development Agreement, which is application 3362. And the applicant's representatives are here if you have any questions or comments.
Do you folks have a presentation, or is it just here for questions?
Good evening, Michael Shimento for the applicant. In respect of your time, we're here to answer any questions that you may have. We support staff.
Thank you. Then in that case, board members, do you have any questions for the applicant or for staff?
I'd like to know a little bit more about the residential.
Would you, well, go ahead.
I'd like to know a little bit more about what the high density residential might look like.
This is the is this the zoning map? Correct.
Right. The high density is that purple.
It is the purple, ma'am.
Right, yeah. So there's 2 left.
Mm-hmm. And in those, the track to the northern part of the property, track 5, something I can't see.
Okay, this is a medium density right there, which is track 5E, and then this is 5A? I think it's track 5A where there's high density, and the other one here is in track 10C.
Essentially, the difference is under the zoning is that under the purple, the developer or a developer can do a multifamily 2, which has a maximum height of 60 feet and 12 units per acre, just on those tracks. The orange allows for the less intense multifamily, which is 50 feet and 8 units per acre. And in the tracks that are being rezoned tonight, we're also providing the opportunity for the developers who have this under contract to provide single-family lots, but in a more dense fashion. Does that answer your question?
Are we talking about multiple dwellings? You know, how many stories or floors or units in a we're talking about buildings now. We're not talking about single-family homes.
That is correct. In the purple, the developer, and that's not part of tonight's program, a developer of those tracks in the purple are entitled to get to 60 feet in height and 12 units per acre, so 4 to 5 stories, similar to Canopy Walk might be. That gives you some height density ideas.
Okay. One other thing. Have you tried to utilize the Palm Coast Public Service radio station to advertise that or to notify folks that you're having hearings?
No, we have not. We follow the city's code and the statutory code as far as notice. If that's something that the city wants to do, they can implement
that. You're not restricted from going a step further, are you?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, so that if you chose to utilize that, you could?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, thank you.
There's no developers drawing plans right now, right? I mean, we're at a point where we're talking about making some MPD changes, and then developers might come along, see what the changes are, and do a site plan or a...
That's correct. As Ray said earlier, there are approximately 3 to 4 developers, tracks 1, 2, and 3, tracks 6A and 7A, and the group that took recently closed on all of parcel 5. So now we have 3 new developers that are purchasing the property that are actively discussing development plans with your staff. Probably within a few months, you'll start to see some plans, whether it's through a site plan or a preliminary plat application.
Great.
So that's what we anticipate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Clint, anything?
Jake, no.
Jake, I'm sorry.
All right.
Clint's not speaking.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Clint?
I have a problem with the multifamily part of this because council is trying to do away with a lot of this multifamily projects. I mean, I don't know that there's any applications for this type of thing or not, but if we approve it, then we're opening the door for multifamily buildings. And council is still, I haven't heard them change their mind on it.
Mr.
Chair. That.
Mr. Davis, maybe I can.
Could I answer that one? Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Mr. Davis, we have brought what City Council directed staff to do when it comes to multifamily was specifically some of these properties that were located in the Matanzas neighborhood. We got some of them on here. Let me just point this out real quick. Within this neighborhood here, the Matanzas area, you had small little pockets like this that are surrounded by existing residential development, and council directed staff to try to work with the property owners to rezone those from multifamily to single family, and we did so on probably 4 or 5 of those. This is what City Council was talking about, and as a matter of fact, City Council, some of their goals right now are highlighting a diversity of housing and wanting more multifamily apartments in their appropriate locations. So when you heard about City Council getting rid of multifamily, that was really directed to this Matanzas area where we inherited existing zoning, small little pieces of property surrounded by existing residential units that staff, and we all believe, was inappropriate and incompatible. So that's what we did. And that's what their direction was for us, not citywide, just in the area that I highlighted.
Yeah, but that came before this board.
This board recommended approval to our city council to rezone, I think probably 4 rezonings we did of multifamily to residential that were surrounded by existing residential homes. So, yeah. I just wanted to clear that up.
Last question, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Trimento, thank you for opening yourself up for questions tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
But I just wondered why you did not choose to come with a presentation rather than, you know, rather than just saying, well, if you have any questions, ask.
Well,
just for the sake of full disclosure or
certainly
for our understanding.
Well, first, there's not much more to show than okay. what Bill has done, and he's done a good, we've been working on this for a while. There are no plans that we were able to show. There's no other changes. I mean, really what we've done here is just try to move things around, move the industrial away from residential. We've changed some of the institutional that was along the railroad to meet the demands of the developer of that area for single family. I really don't have anything more to show to you all, such as vertical plans or pictures or anything other than that.
Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh.
No questions.
Okay. I do. It seems to me that we've increased the acreage available to single-family and multifamily and decreased the industrial acreage. And if you go back to, like, the second or third chart you used where you showed that one, what effect has what we're doing tonight having on those numbers?
Okay. I think the big one, and Steph did review this, was where it's talking about the maximum area for residential, 1,528 acres, and you saw the residential increase, but it only went to 1,373. I'm sorry, it went to 1,467. So they have about 60 acres still left.
I'm sorry, there's an increase? There's a decrease of 60 acres?
Right. The residential increase from, so that maximum chart is so they can move this stuff around, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael,
sure.
But you can move this stuff around, and so they're starting here, but the bar is up here. So you're allowed to move this stuff around. So it's going from 1,373 to 1,467, but the residential max is 1,528. So they still have about 61 more units, I'm sorry, 61 more acres available.
And is the same thing true of industrial? Have we taken any?
The industrial on this, the DRI, they don't list industrial. It falls in a subset under business institutional.
For example, Mr. Jones, tracks 17 and 18 presently have office 2 and industrial. So there are other parcels on there that aren't colored light blue, specifically for industrial, that allow for industrial uses there. I'm trying to think of some other tracks.
And if you go back to the table, right. Bill, real quick, that shows the entitlements.
Table 4-2 on page
right
4
there.
Of the amendment.
Mr. Jones, the 800,000 square feet has not changed. They can still have entitlements to do that.
Okay. Just change the acreage in which they can place it.
Yeah. I see. It may be less than that, mm-hmm. but it can't be more than that.
Right.
Okay. That answers my question. So we'll go to a public hearing. Shouldn't take too long. We'll open the public hearing for the amendment of the amend and restate the second amended and restated Palm Coast Park development of regional impact, as well as the rezoning of 4,585 acres from MPD to MPD in the Palm Coast Park. So we'll speak to both of them. Anyone wanting to come to the podium, by all means, do so. Seeing no one coming to the podium, we'll take it back to the board, close the public hearing, bring it back to the board for comments or action.
I'm just a little bit unsure, uncomfortable at this point.
I'm
a little unsure and a little uncomfortable. I don't, you know, with this. Excuse me. I just would like to hear a little more discussion about, you know.
I think a lot of what they're trying to do is ahead of the game. They have it. What the questions you have and the questions I would have, they can't answer right now because. Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's raised their hand and said, I want to do this in this space. I understand that. My concern is that if we say yes to this, we might be opening the door to future conflict with our neighbors. We've seen that before. We've seen that before, but go, please.
It's already entitled. Okay. All they're doing is they're making a better plan to whenever you drive into a residential community, you're not going to be driving past an industrial area that might have mini storage or it might have flex space bays that you don't want to see while you're driving through to get to your little subdivision. So they're going to take those sections and relocate them to a more appropriate area. As you notice, that's more towards the rear as opposed to the front part.
That's the first part of it.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, when you look at the plan, I vehemently disagree with with Glenn with respect to multifamily. When you actually look at the numbers for Flagler County, there's actually demand for about 800 units in just as of this conversation, based on our current population, our existing multifamily, and what's it coming through the pipeline. Because all the multifamily that we have been approving has gone towards ALF or memory care or ILFs. So that's another factor for the density for multifamily. So there's multiple uses. Just because they're labeling it multifamily doesn't mean there's going to be a 4 or 5 story apartment complex. It might be 2, 3 story, another ALF, just because we have a larger demographic in Flagler County.
Or duplexes.
Or even duplexes.
But
yeah.
The first issue in front of us is to discuss and either approve or not the amendment of this existing DRI.
To allow them to make that movement within that.
It's not to roll back the clock to the
The market's going to drive the demand. They're not going to, a developer coming in isn't going to build something that's a white elephant if there isn't any demand for it. And that's what's happening to our multifamily, which, as you say, Chris. The demand right now is for assisted living.
And to be perfectly honest, it's actually greater on the low-income housing. And I know nobody wants to hear that, but
when
you separate out...
We've been through that.
There's a ton of demand.
I don't disagree with that, because there are any number of people who are here living on pensions and Social Security and other income, but they're bringing younger people down, relatives down, who don't have the same, depth of financial wellness. So, there are people and younger people, working families that are looking for something that's more affordable. I understand that.
And not only that, the first thing I noticed about the plan was, typically, Jacksonville's a great example of this. There's multifamily all clustered right together. And it's hard for developers because they all cannibalize each other. So you can never raise rents, even if you raise the quality of the asset. So having it spread out benefits not only the end user, but the general market as a whole.
That helps a lot. Thank you.
I would make a motion to approve application number 3369.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and seconded. Ms. Schaefer?
This is for the DRI book.
This is
for the amend and restate.
This is the amend and restate, the second amended and restated Palm Coast Park Development Regional Impact Development Order.
Okay, Mrs. Lucas?
Convoluted sentence.
Yes.
Mr. Dolney?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, so now we're on to the rezoning of the acreage.
I would also make the motion to approve application number 3362.
Second?
I'll second that.
And Jake seconds.
Mrs. Lucas?
Yes.
Mr. Dolney?
Yes.
Mr. Scully?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Congratulations, gentlemen. Okay. Does the staff or Katie have anything for us?
No report for me.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Okay.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye, aye, aye.
We're out of here.